Hello and welcome to the 42nd episode issue thingy of Read Comics. Today we have myself, Martin, and
Jason Johnston,
and Jason Tucker,
and Angela Cabrini,
Florence,
and Susie.
Yay!
most of the regular crew. Mike is not here.
What a jerk.
He may show up partway through. So if you hear a knock on the door in the middle of the podcast, it's probably Mike. Or maybe not.
And if you see him in real life, you should totally give him shit.
Yes. I do already.
But about this.
Oh, okay.
More so.
Today we're talking about magic and books about it.
Books about magic.
Books about comic books about magic.
Comic books about magic. Except really there's no books.
Hold on.
That's
I looked at
right
the cover
there.
And it was Harry Potter. So I don't
Now, you know what? Harry Potter never rode a skateboard.
Oh, well, I guess.
As far as you know.
I suppose.
And I think we did check this a while back, but Harry Potter came out after Books of Magic.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Significantly.
Right.
I mean, what year was this?
90, I think.
90? Okay. And when did the first Harry Potter come out?
Somewhere between 94 and 98, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So, that's one of the things that I want to talk about, is how this is not really like Harry Potter, and
no.
How it's, it's just, there have been so many comparisons that I thought there was going to be a lot more similarity, and really, he has an owl.
Yeah.
That's
the main similarity is just the look of
the
character
cover.
And the fact that he has a pet owl and that he is destined to be a great wizard.
All right.
Yeah. So
he has dark hair and glasses and is English. Those are the similarities, but the stories are completely different.
Yes.
Well, and I don't know if this is a bit of a spoiler. I'm just gonna say now we're spoiling anything anyone's read. And poor Angela hasn't finished the first trade yet, but and actually Jason's like two pages from the end. So, but he's not human either, which sort of pissed me off when I read it.
They talk about that. They allude to it in this trade.
Yep.
Yeah, they
allude to it here.
Yeah, it's just like, but that's the. I don't know. I mean, I guess I feel like that's one of the quintessential bits of Harry Potter that makes it really compelling is that you imagine yourself as this kid. You imagine you could be any one of these kids at Hogwarts.
Okay.
I find it similar just because that, like, in every way, Tim is a human boy. He's, just the fact that he isn't really, is completely unknown to him. And once he does learn it, doesn't really affect the way he acts or change at all. He's very relatable to me.
And when you were a kid, didn't you ever possibly imagine that
I was an alien?
You were, well, an alien or, a changeling of some sort?
I was going to say, changelings are such a mainstay of young adult books that I grew up on. You know, that's like a completely familiar and relatable concept of. You know, your parents aren't really your parents, you're really secretly magical, or something more than the people around you.
Yeah. I mean, most of the time it's, kids are like, oh, I got switched at birth with some rich family's kid,
Oh, yeah, some famous celebrities are really my parents. And
yes.
I was kidnapped, and, yeah.
Yeah, but for me it was always all about fairies.
I'm still kind of hoping that might be the case.
I figured I was the only human and everybody else was fake. So I always had the reverse. Like the Truman Show thing.
Or the sunglasses and you saw everyone was aliens.
I bought that movie. I haven't seen it.
What movie are you referring to?
They Live. With Roddy Piper.
But
so,
back to Harry Potter.
Yes.
Back to Harry Potter.
Now, we haven't actually said specifically what it is we're talking about. I'm sure most people have figured it out. But this was a book club selection, and it was Marty's selection. And so take it away, Marty.
We were reading The Books of Magic and specifically the first four issues that were written by Neil Gaiman. Now, who's the artist? Are there multiple artists?
Okay. Artists for each different issue.
Yeah, all right. So that's enough, really.
Yeah. And this was done as a standalone thing. I think they kind of figured, okay, this is going to become a series. But, I mean, when Neil Gaiman wrote this, he wrote it as a standalone four-issue miniseries. And, in fact, was Vertigo an actual imprint when this came out? Or was this still pre-Vertigo?
I'm really not sure.
Okay.
This would have been, like, the very early days of it, if it was Vertigo time.
Well, where does this fall in the whole Sandman, you know, chronology? I mean,
I was just trying to figure that out too when I was reading it. Obviously, it's before the end of the series because we get a cameo from Morpheus as Morpheus. We'll go into that.
Well, and it's one of those Vertigo comics that does take place in the actual DC universe,
mm-hmm.
like Sandman, like Constantine, like Madame Xanadu. I mean, there are Vertigo comics that take place as part of the regular superhero universe and ones that don't. The ones that don't, they touch, but don't fit in all the time.
Although, I have read the entire series of Books of Magic, and really, this is the only place where it really comes this closely entwined with the DC universe.
Yeah.
Like, you see John Constantine a couple of times again.
Okay.
And I think you might see a couple of the Endless or, you know, Lucifer or other Vertigo-ish characters.
Okay.
But you don't really see any more costumed cape crusaders kind of thing.
No more Zatanna?
Not that I recall,
though.
Okay. And you definitely do. I actually read the second trade, which is they renumbered, and so that's 1 through 4 of the actual series, as well. And that heavily features death from Sandman mythology.
Oh yeah.
And so in the fact that this connects to Sandman and Constantine and all these other comics, and those connect to the DC universe heroes, then it is part of that universe, but it's separate.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, this is more, these four issues were, I think they say in the introduction to the trade that this was specifically a commission piece for Neil Gaiman to kind of explore the magical elements of the DC universe proper.
Well, and you know, I have to say that I've read this multiple times. I read it, you know, many, many years ago. Back in the 90s, I read it in the early 2000s, and now I read it again for this. And I have to say that in some ways it does kind of read as more of a guide to the magic of the DC universe than a narrative of what's happening to this
of
kid.
Its own.
It felt like it was just kind of like an intro to the magic in the DC universe. Here's a page about this thing. Here's a page about this.
Yeah.
Here's a page about that, which bored me to tears.
It's kind of like Who's Who, the DC Who's Who comics.
It's interesting because I remember being completely lost when it came to the DC characters. I'm only being interested in the story about the boy, and then I read all the other trades, and so what my overriding memory is of being able to continue the story about.
I've read comics for 20 years. I was lost by all the characters in this. So, and I like the magic stuff. And so I was like, wow.
Well, and interestingly, a lot of the stuff that they talk about in this is stuff that has come up more recently. So I think part of that is that writers of current DC comics are being, now we're showing that they grew up reading Neil Gaiman.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're seeing that, like, at one point they talk about the cancer god.
Oh, yeah.
Who showed up in the all-new Adam.
Wait, it cut out on me. I didn't hear who you said that you were talking about.
At one point in this, they talked about the cancer god. And
yeah.
I forget what his name was, but that the cancer god actually showed up in some issues of the all-new Adam. Living in the sewers underneath Ivy Town.
I actually noticed in a couple of current DC stuff that I've read, like some stuff from Sandman popping up in other people's, like in a Batman issue.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, there's definitely Neil Gaiman is now considered a heavy influence.
Well, and I think, you know, that probably happened pretty early. I mean, I think Sandman was so huge.
But I mean, I don't mean like the endless and other stuff. I mean like a random character from very, very early on in the movie. Showing up, it was in Kevin Smith's one of the serial killers from the serial killer.
Oh, yeah.
Really early on showed up in it was an issue of Kevin Smith's run on Batman.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean that's what I'm getting at is that Neil Gaiman has been influential, but now we're having writers who aren't just influenced by Neil Gaiman as a fellow writer, but Neil Gaiman is someone they grew up reading, and there's a difference in that.
Okay, sure.
Like he's not so much a peer for them. He's he's the creator of the universes that they're
exactly
they're writing from.
So, anyway, again, what this was a four-issue limited series that came out in the 90s, early 90s, written by Neil Gaiman about a boy named Tim Hunter, who didn't know that he was anything other than just a regular boy. He has a father who he doesn't really talk to that much, father who kind of sits around and watches TV all day.
His mother has died when he was very young.
And he kind of does his own thing, and I mean, he comes across as kind of, appearance-wise, as kind of a nerdy kid. I mean, you don't ever see really any of his friends. You don't see anything about him. In fact, he's very much in this, he's a non-entity.
Yeah.
He's a cipher. Except he is skinny and has dark hair and glasses.
Right, he's all potential.
Yeah. And he meets four strange men.
Trenchcoat Brigade.
Thinks that they might be perverts because, you know, they're very interested in this 12-year-old kid.
Is he 12 at this point?
Yeah.
Okay. He,
and they are all wearing trench coats.
They are characters who have been around in the DC Universe for a while. There's the Phantom Stranger, who's been around for decades. There's John Constantine, who, at this point, I think he had his own series. He first showed up in Swamp Thing. There is...
And Keanu Reeves.
Dr. Occult.
Oh, worst casting ever.
I still haven't seen that, actually.
God, it's so wrong.
Dr. Occult, who I don't know what his history is.
And I actually had to go...
We have a new addition to the podcast, actually.
That's Colleen.
Yes, Colleen, who is brand new.
Florence and I made her.
It's a collaborative piece.
So there's a couple of characters of the Trenchcoat Brigade that are a bit more esoteric than Phantom Stranger.
I was going to say, I went and looked at Wikipedia and all four of them, and apparently Dr. Occult is DC's oldest... longest running character, not like continuously running character, but first appearance.
Really?
He was created in 1935.
So he actually beats out
the people who created Superman a few years later.
Oh.
Wow.
Well, I knew that Zatara actually was older than Batman. Like, he appeared in, I think, Detective Comics before Batman did. But I didn't realize that Dr. Occult was that old.
Yeah, well, I before I read this, I'd never heard of him, and I don't think I've seen him in anything else since then. But yeah, according to Wikipedia, which we all know is, you know, the most reliable source.
Yep.
Ever.
He's DC's oldest character.
Now, what about Mr. E?
Mr. E is the... I don't know, it depends on... It's either him or Constantine. He's the most recent of the four.
Okay.
I think he was created in the 70s.
Created in the 70s? And was he crazy like that?
Not necessarily. They did say that Neil Gaiman specifically changed his character drastically, but they didn't say if he was crazy or not.
Okay. Interesting. And there is another character that they meet. Each of these four characters takes Tim on a journey through the DC Universe, and basically this is where the whole intro to the DC Universe magic comes from, the whole who's who type thing, where each character is taking them through some aspect. Phantom Stranger takes him through the past. And
this is where, for me, this is actually where I stopped reading. Because I felt like, the first time, like, you know, when I kind of put it down and it sat on the shelf for a few months. And that was because I said, wow, this is supposed to be Scrooged. You know, this is, like,
yeah,
essentially the magical version
of a Christmas Carol.
A Christmas Carol.
Yeah. Okay,
past, present,
future,
reference first,
aspect, you also get the bonus.
I couldn't think of a Christmas Carol.
Magic Land.
What's that, Susie?
I said, yeah, you get the there's the past, present, and future chapters, but there's the bonus Magical Land chapter.
Yeah, Fairyland.
Yeah,
Fairy, and they talk about, I always like it when they reference Gemworld, because I actually liked the Amethyst comics when they were out.
Agreed.
You know, it was a series in the mid-80s about a girl who was a princess of the gem world, and she never knew it, and, yeah. So
what's the gem world?
The gem world is another realm in the DC universe that is focused around 12 gemstones, and they all have special powers related to that.
Am I thinking this is an attempt to attract female?
I'm pretty sure that this was an attempt, and I don't know how successful it was. I mean,
not
it didn't. Well, and I'm trying to remember how many issues it ran.
I don't know,
but
I remember. Yeah,
but it wasn't bad. I don't remember who the writer was.
Yeah.
I don't remember very much about it. But if they ever put it out as a trade, it's not that bad. It's actually quite entertaining. Anyway, yeah, she's a princess, not quite She-Ra, but not that far off either. Anyway, so, yeah,
okay.
All these various connections, and this is where all the various DC characters come in. They have Madame Xanadu show up. They have Zatara and Zatanna and Sargon the Sorcerer and Jason Blood, who is the demon, and just various characters as they're going through like that. But, again, the whole thing has Tim just kind of along for the ride learning about this stuff as we learn about it. So we are Tim.
Yeah.
At this point, basically.
He doesn't have a personality,
yeah.
Doesn't do anything.
Well, he kind of whines.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a whiner.
A little bit.
I think he's more a little more of a quipper than a whiner.
Yeah, I never felt like he was unsympathetic or annoying.
Yeah, no, he wasn't. No, yeah, I didn't think he was
no
Luke. So.
He's explained this to me, but yeah, but it's weirder than that.
Yeah, I think if he didn't challenge them to ask questions, that would be more of a disconnect for me.
Yeah, well, I felt that he was just asking the questions that we were asking as going along, going, what? And he'd
mm-hmm.
repeat what we were thinking. So, which was fine, which, you know, makes it, but it did feel like all they were doing was going, well, then this is the magic over here in the DC universe, it's the magic
and
hero.
Well, you know, from the perspective of, like, I'm reading it now after having read the whole series several years ago, like, it feels way more like, oh, he's barely in this at all. He's just sitting there on the sidelines. But at the time, I didn't notice that at all. But then, you know, having read all the other stories where he is the main character, I noticed it a lot more than this time.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, well, I don't know. I don't know how much we want to get into those because...
the other stories?
Yeah. But I only having read that one other trade paperback, that's all I've read so far, I was really disappointed. Like, I was kind of like, what?
You were disappointed in the Neil Gaiman one?
No, no, in the other stuff.
Oh, in the other stuff.
So,
I was disappointed by the Neil Gaiman one.
You were you?
Yes.
Yeah?
We haven't gotten to that part of the show yet.
So
where you give your impression.
The first trade of the ongoing series?
Yep, which is only 4 issues.
Right. There's a lot more to it. It went... I'm not sure how long it went. I know it went, like, there's about 6 or 7 collected trades, and then there's about 20 to 30 issues that never have been collected, which I then went in, like, after I'd read all the trades, went around all over the internet and to various stores and found them all.
I think it's about 70-some issues.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on, a lot of stories that sort of two throws into... a very interesting character, although not always the most sympathetic character. Like, I think the most sympathetic character, and probably the most popular after a while, was his girlfriend, Molly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Molly. When does she get introduced?
Yeah, she's not in there in the first four.
I think she probably doesn't show up until, the next trade after the one you've read.
So, as I was reading this, and reading the trade, and then I picked up the first of the ongoing trade, just while we were waiting to get ready and started paging through it, and I really only read, the first two pages of that, and Tim comes in and sees his dad, and his dad is watching TV, and do you know what it really made me think of? Time Bandits.
I love Time Bandits.
I love Time Bandits, too.
I mean, you have this kid whose parents
just don't pay attention.
All they do is really just watch TV. And has his own little adventures and then ends up having this huge adventure by these strangers that take him out of this world. And, so it really made me think a lot of Time Bandits. And that predates this, even. I forget when. I think Time Bandits was 1982 or 81.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't seen that since I was a kid.
Yeah. So I'm wondering how much Time Bandits, in turn, influenced Neil Gaiman.
I think the uninterested parent type predates even Time Bandits.
Well, true. But,
so...
but in the story, though, it's more than just the archetype, really.
No, I
Well, yeah, his father also gets expanded on as the series goes on, and you get a little more depth to him. And it's rather just, why he's just sort of sitting there, not paying attention at all. And yeah, there's a little more to it than that.
Yeah, I kind of feel like they were trying to set up something there. Or anyway, allude to, there's definitely some kind of history where he, accepted Tim. Because it doesn't sound like, he obviously isn't the father, but it doesn't sound like his mother... Well, do we know for sure that his mother is Titania?
Yes and no.
All I know about that, because I haven't read the whole series, is that in the issue where they're in Faerie and Titania... accepts the mundane egg to let him out of his contract to stay in Faerie. And they go through all these pictures of her. There's a picture of Titania, and then another picture of her, and then a picture of kind of just a frumpy middle-aged woman wearing the same kind of necklace that this other image of Titania is. And I mean, you're totally supposed to assume that that's her mother, or his mother, and then the next frame has a caption saying, "And will you also hatch out worlds, my son?" So it definitely alludes to him being a changeling at that point.
I need to read deeper, because I didn't get that at all.
Oh, you didn't catch that that's supposed to be, that Titania appeared in that form
here,
at some point?
I've got the open to page, we see her looking into the egg and we see her reflection. Then we see the face of a fairy that tried to mess with Tim and keep him in fairy for a long time earlier. Then we see the face of Baba Yaga, who also captured Tim. Then we see the face of Titania as the DC readers would have originally seen her in Sandman. Then we see this woman that we don't recognize at all. We don't know what she has to do with anything, but yeah, my assumption is always that's what Tim's mother looked like. And then we get her answer asking, will you also have child worlds?
Wearing a similar necklace.
Right,
yep.
He's also wearing a red beaded necklace.
So.
I thought she was the evil forces trying to kill him.
What?
Because there's always somebody trying to kill him. I guess that was part of my problem with the story is there were constantly I don't know who was trying to kill him. Only hint I got was this woman because she was... these all these different things, and I was like, oh, maybe she's the agent trying to kill him and not hatch out worlds or what, you know what I mean? I think that was the thing with just reading this book. There was so much where they don't answer or don't explain things. I'm like, really? Where's the full story? Do I have to read another?
Well, that's interesting. One of the things I think, now that I've read this multiple times, I want to know, I want to see the issue of them in Calcutta.
Well, yeah, well, who were they even fighting in Calcutta?
They
were called the Cold Flame.
Yeah. The Cold Flame. So,
yeah, and they are, and who are they? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And why did they...
Well, they mentioned the Cold Flame, something to do with vampires.
Is that just a DC...
I don't even know.
I have
that.
No idea.
It's something that Neil Gaiman made up to sort of illustrate that there's lots of people interested in Tim and what he could be, whether he could be good, he could be evil, and, you know, people who either want to use him for their own purposes or get him out of the way, because either way he's just going to be too powerful. I don't think that the actual people who were hunting for him, you know, was some random danger thing. I don't think they were that important. It was for the story. The importance was that he was in this danger because of what he could be.
But I still want to see the battle.
Of
the trench coat brigade with the cold flame.
I think it was all made up. I figured it was lies by the trench coat brigade that these people weren't really trying to kill him.
Well,
and that they did this too.
I actually wondered some of that too, like how truthful they were being, whether they were really this benevolent group.
Well, at the end,
like,
you find out they lied the whole time anyway.
Right.
So,
you know, but he never really did lie. He said, "The choice is yours. The choice is always yours."
Lie,
he never
deception.
Said,
yeah.
He never
yeah.
said you have to make the choice right now. And in fact, he never said that you can't choose one and then go back and like. Well, he did say that you can't,
but you know what I mean.
Take it back, or whatever. But you know.
It's the subtle lying, it's the deception.
Yeah, it
you know,
is. But it's
so.
Also the Phantom Stranger. And,
yeah,
know,
oh yeah, no.
This is what he does.
No, oh yeah.
In everything.
Oh yeah, I mean, we're definitely not supposed to think that the Trench Coat Brigade is pure. Like, purely benevolent and just have the best intentions for him, but we are supposed to think they're mostly on his side.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, I will say, this is kind of an aside, but it bugged me that, so the guy who ended up taking him to the end of time.
Mr. E.
And then he was absent. He was gone. And the excuse for that was that he was walking back through time. But if he's walking back through time, why didn't he just take a few extra steps and then he'd have been there? Like, you know, why did he not walk all the way back? You know what I mean?
All the way back to where?
To presumably the point where...
They actually mentioned him at some other point in the book as well. I think Merlin mentioned him meeting someone walking backward through time. So apparently he kept going. You know, he just kept going past the...
But if he did keep going...
To him it takes thousands and thousands and thousands and billions of years, but... To them, and she should just be, oh, he's there.
Exactly,
you know,
exactly. He should have just been.
Yet I never thought of that at all.
But it would be a different version of him.
Sure, it would have been an older version of him.
Yeah.
But it's just
maybe he died,
it bugged me that, like,
as he's walking backwards.
Yeah, you know, if he was going to walk back,
maybe
he's not, then
he
would be here.
Exactly.
So
you know when we were talking about all these various forces that want him for whatever reason, it actually made me think of another movie that had kind of a similar theme. Night Watch and Day Watch.
Yeah.
With the chosen child and the various forces that are trying
to... But that's different because they both wanted him. Here, the bad guys want to kill him, the good guys want to give him a choice, and maybe kill him.
And maybe, well, and I would assume that some of the bad guys don't necessarily want to kill him. They want to.
We didn't see any of them, so we have to make that leap. There was not a single bad guy, other than what I find out was his mother now, who wanted to actually keep him. They were all trying to kill him, which I was like, really? The bad? So he's obviously going for good.
Wait,
the bad guys.
Wait, what about the guy on that kept appearing to him? Do
oh,
we know
yeah,
who
no,
that,
that
is.
Yeah, that was Dead Man.
Boston Brand. Yeah,
yeah, Boston Brand.
Oh.
You remember those comics.
I do remember those.
But you didn't have to make that connection. Yeah,
at
but
all.
You have to know all that stuff in order to. I mean, I was stressed to know who everybody was in this. So.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, they
but again, at the time I first read it, no idea who that was or what his deal was. But that was kind of Boston Brand. I liked that about it. I liked that there was just this stuff that just showed up and they didn't know what was going on, and unless one of the trench coat brigade was right there, you wouldn't know. And I kind of like that.
I wonder if there are online annotations.
That would be cool, actually, to read like an annotated version.
Sure.
Oh yeah, that'd be huge.
In much the same way that everything by
Alan Moore.
Actually, who's the other one that I'm thinking of? Not Alan
Grant
Moore.
Morrison?
Grant Morrison. Everything Grant Morrison has ever written has pretty much been annotated online now because you kind of
never seen that
with Grant Morrison.
I did not know that. Actually,
yeah,
I think
great.
There are some things I'd like to read.
Yeah, there's
the
a
annotations
ton of, stuff.
Of
yeah
for Grant Morrison.
I
yep.
swear, still a Grant Morrison comic. There's the left hand page, the page that's in his head,
yep.
and the right hand page.
Yep.
For every two pages of comic, there's one that's still in his head that didn't make it down into the comic. Now, those absolute Sandmans, are those annotated, or are they just,
No.
They're just
those
bigger.
Those are the stories reprinted and in some cases recolored, and touched up. And
okay.
then there's a whole bunch of things like indexes in the back, or appendices, but there aren't any annotations.
Huh. I would like to see annotations for that as well.
It seems like it's more of an online thing than an actual printed thing.
Yeah.
You know, for some
reason,
I don't necessarily think I want to have an annotation for.
Oh.
Like,
see,
I love
annotations.
And I think I get the information that I need from the story. Even if I don't understand who every single character is, I know what's going on.
Well, I look at annotated versions a lot like watching
the director's commentary.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, and that's kind of a, maybe not accurate because usually the annotations are not by the writer or any of the artists.
It's a film commentary, but not necessarily the director commentary.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Which is often better.
And it can be interesting. I've read annotated stuff before. I just recently read annotated Wizard of Oz, which was interesting.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
No, I would never recommend that the first reading be of an annotated version. But Florence has a really nice annotated Alice in Wonderland. And I keep meaning to read it because it's been a while since I've read Alice in Wonderland, too. So
that's certainly an example of something that there's so much below the surface.
Well,
for sure.
There really has been a groundspring of comic...
Groundswell
of comic annotations coming up online. I don't know if the first one was Crisis on Infinite Earth, but
that'd be great.
A huge annotation for all 12 issues of Crisis on Infinite Earths. And like I said, everything Grant Morrison has written pretty much has been annotated now. His runs on Batman, his various miniseries, all that stuff. I don't know if everything. Maybe they haven't gone through every issue of Animal Man or Doom Patrol. But
I think the only one that I've read a lot of, but I still don't think I've read the whole thing, was The Watchmen. There's a Watchmen annotation.
Oh, that'd be great.
And I was like, wow, I read pretty closely, and I think I read it even twice at that point, and there's so much I didn't know.
Well, did you even know with The Watchmen that the characters were older characters than that he couldn't use, so he changed them slightly?
No, I don't think I even
knew. I only found that out, when people were writing articles about the movie. Yeah, I didn't know that.
The Night Owl is the Blue Beetle.
And I love the Blue Beetle, so...
He's a very different Blue Beetle.
Well, a little.
But, Rorschach was...
He's kind of more brown. So he's like a brown beetle? Like
question.
A dung beetle?
Yeah, the question. Yeah, Rorschach was the question.
Oh, sure. Well, what got me about that was just there was a lot of comments about the panel placement and kind of the mirroring and stuff, and just like
I thought that was great.
What?
Yep.
Like I didn't see any of that when I read.
So were the annotations for The Watchmen done by Alan Moore? Or were they...
No. Oh yeah, that'll be the day.
did he make his name get taken off of the?
Well, it also begs the question about whether the annotations created by fans are actually correct. I mean, it could be that the author looks at an annotated version and says, "I didn't intend
but
that." But
yeah, I mean, that is literary criticism throughout the ages.
Yeah,
any kind of artistic criticism throughout the ages is, you know, the artist's intent versus what the reader gets out of it.
Well, I think it just, it might be presented as if it's explanation rather than criticism, though. And the explanation
true.
Might not actually have
yeah,
been
true.
What the writer intended.
It would at least explain who some of the characters were for at least the books of magic. I would have really preferred to read this
yeah.
annotated
yeah.
than
and
the
I
way
mean,
I did.
Some of that, like, it still rings true. Like, I've read a whole bunch of, so this was, I read this when I think, like, some of the only comics that I'd read at that point were, like, Sandman and maybe Strangers in Paradise. And so I had no idea who most of these people were, and these were my introductions to them. And then, having gone, and, you know, since then, reading just tons and tons of stuff, especially a lot of DC stuff, and reading this again, still don't know a lot who a lot of these guys are, except for having seen them here.
One of the characters...
My first experience of Dr. Occult was this, and this is so far the only experience.
One of the characters that shows up in passing in this, and also not really as someone that they were introducing him to necessarily, but he shows up, is Dr. 13. And it's the guy who picks them up in a car to drive them, I forget.
San Francisco,
okay. And he actually had a miniseries just recently
oh.
that was amazing. It was paired with another series. It was like the backup story in a series of comics.
That and was Brian Azzarello, right?
Yes, Brian Azzarello, who did 100 Bullets.
Yep.
And this was a comedy slash satire about all these characters, these extra characters from the DC Universe that just don't ever really get used, like Dr. 13. And Anthro, and these Nazi gorillas, and I Vampire.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was great. This was the backup stories in these comics, and they were far better than the main story, and they were collected in a trade that I can't remember the name of that trade, but it's Dr. 13 something. And if anyone can find it, I highly recommend it. And it's kind of like this in a little bit, in that it's kind of, you know, all these characters that you won't have any idea who they are, but it won't matter.
It mattered.
No. I think we haven't gotten to the fact that Jason didn't like it.
I haven't heard if anybody else liked it yet, though.
Oh, I liked it. I mean, I'm with Susie in that I read it back in the day, and totally loved it. You know, I was a huge Neil Gaiman fan already at that point. And it's the kind of story that I really like. I mean, like I said, like I always ate up any young adult book that had to do with changelings and, you know, kids with destinies and fairies and all of that stuff. So, so yeah, I mean, it carried me through the whole series.
Yeah, I can't quite, differentiate between, like, whether I like this and whether I like the whole series, because I liked the whole series a whole lot, and, you know, I think this is very well written, and the art, each different artist is really great, probably the best art from the whole series. But yeah, it's not necessarily Tim's shining moments.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's I did not have time to reread as I was making a baby, but so I can't really remember how this first trade is different from the whole rest of the series. I just remember the bigger story.
It does seem like the artwork that in the continuing series was a lot closer to the Charles Best artwork than any of the other artists.
Yep, I would buy that. I think the art for this first four is really rich. I mean, and I think pretty good. I mean, I liked it.
Yeah. Mostly painted.
Yeah, it seems kind of watercolor-y. Is that accurate?
Well,
I don't even know if it is
Charles
watercolor.
Best, sure. I love Charles Best. He's got
yeah.
a very distinctive style. He does fairy tales, like, better than he's got any other artist out there.
That's so interesting, because I can't stand his work in Stardust.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's gorgeous.
You know, I think he has some different styles. I feel like at times his work is really Spartan, and Stardust was kind of like that, where it feels like... Yeah, like really... Like, there's just not a lot of detail.
Large male and holding a sword?
No, like, you know, sparse, yeah. Like,
oh, sparse.
Sparse.
Okay.
But you can use the word Spartan to mean sparse.
Are they from the same
group? Yeah, well, no.
We're not in
but,
the semantics class, people.
Anyway, the point is, I feel like, you know, like there'll be a lot of lines without detail, you know, and especially like kind of on the edges of the pages, it'll just kind of trail off or whatever. Like, I feel
so
like
weird. I think of his art is so intricate.
Yes, Charles Vess, I think is very intricate, and I like his stuff. John Bolton's good. The other two guys, who I haven't heard of before, Scott Hampton and Paul Johnson, I didn't care for.
Actually, I really like. So, did Charles Vess do that first, the first issue?
No, Charles Vess did
no.
The third.
John Bolton did the first one, which
I love.
The
first,
yeah, the
yeah.
first one is great, but it's Bolton. He's
first
always
one
like
John
that.
Bolton, I think.
Yep, and then Scott Hampton did the other one. I don't know who he is. It
I've
was
only ever seen him
mediocre.
Other work, some really early issues. Of
I didn't care for it.
And the fourth one, who was apparently Paul Johnson.
Paul Johnson. I thought it was Bill Szczynkiewicz.
Bill is Szczynkiewicz, yeah.
Is that how you say that? I never knew how to say that.
I think it's Szczynkiewicz.
It
seemed
what you're talking about,
very
know.
Much like Bill Szczynkiewicz.
Yes. But not as good.
No.
So this Bolton guy, what else has he done?
Oof. He's written some stuff,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's done a lot of stuff. I can't off the top of my head remember what he did. Where's the computer?
It's right here.
There you go.
And speaking of the computer, this is kind of a callback, but there is an annotation online of this.
That
nice.
I would be interested in.
So, yeah, and it doesn't, I mean, it obviously doesn't have the images and stuff. It just says, you know, page one,
yeah.
You know, here's the stuff. And yeah, I mean, right away, there's like, John Constantine was created by Alan Moore, blah, 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 blah.
Oh.
His first appearance was in Swamp Thing 37 in 1985. You know,
I will say that this book is the reason I like John Constantine. I haven't read any Hellblazer at all.
Oh, he's awesome. And he was the best thing in this book.
I really have been meaning to read Constantine.
Yeah.
Which, during the series, he says that his name is pronounced Constantine. Just saying.
Okay, I think of it as Constantine in my head, too.
Yeah.
Well, I always thought,
I
thought of it as Constantine in my head until I started reading the first... I don't remember if it was in... Swamp Thing that they mentioned this, or if it was in Hellblazer itself, but it was in all that he said that no, his name is pronounced Constantine. And
okay, he said so.
I can't believe they missed the chance to cast James Marsters in that role.
Who knows who James Marsters is?
Yeah, exactly. It was all about Keanu Reeves being a big name.
Yeah,
and having dark hair. That's about
it. Not supposed to have dark hair.
I know.
Yeah.
It totally.
American.
It's true. I mean,
right.
Should they have cast James Marsters, or should they have cast an English person?
Well,
they should have cast an actor.
They should have cast Spike. I mean, like, James Marsters with the bleached blonde hair and the British accent.
I'm kind of holding out for James Marsters as the Caribbean. Never do Sandman, which we never should.
I don't know.
That
would really mess with me.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like the Sandman is way too dark to ever
be
made into a movie.
No,
like,
no.
it would be a really
movies.
Depressing movie.
Yes.
Well, I don't mind the depressing movie, but I think they would do it so badly that...
Yes,
that's
the problem.
I mean, what would you put in a Sandman movie?
Everything, literal, page by page.
But, yeah, you can't do it literal, page by page.
No, I am. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Of course, I mean, that's the same thing with Constantine, that I haven't seen the movie and I've read the whole series, but clearly they'd have to take one story and do that. You know, Sandman... In my opinion, if they're going to do something, an anthology series.
No, they should do like 40 movies. And
40
then,
movies.
Know,
40 movies.
Yeah.
Nice.
That would be the way to do it.
Are you going to spray me?
Not
just
you. The cat is inching towards the food. I got my
eye. I see.
So we started kind of to go around and say basically whether we liked it individually. And I will chime in and say that I don't know. I liked it on some level.
Well, you
but
liked
I also,
it enough that you want to keep going.
I did, and I think, but that comes too from the book club. I think, you know, it's interesting. This is kind of a phenomenon, but for me, anytime we do a book club on a series, I end up getting more into it than I would have otherwise, and I think I do end up liking them more because. You know, and this would happen, like, when I was in a poetry class. You know, like, I'd read a poem, and I'd be like, you know, it's okay. But then after we'd, you know, essentially annotate it, after we'd go line by line and talk about, like, what the poem meant, it would mean more because I knew that. And I think, you know, that happens with these, too. Like, you know, when I first read it, did I care who these four guys were? I was like, yeah, I probably should know who these guys are, but I don't really care. And now I'm kind of like, oh yeah, it's interesting that there's this rich history that I didn't, you know, that I don't have, that I did, you know, that now I'm like learning about. But from a, you know, first time reader perspective, I didn't love it. And I can imagine that I would like it a lot more the second time.
Oh, do we go in order?
Sure.
I already chimed in. Yeah, Pauline did
not like it.
That's my opinion, right there.
Oh.
So she knows. No. I did not dislike it nearly.
Rest of it, or was this enough for you?
Oh, yeah, I am definitely interested in reading the rest of it. Although, I am less interested the more I read.
Do they have annotations for the whole series?
I don't think so. I think, well, this site anyway that I'm on, which I will definitely link, just has the first four books.
Does it just have this, or does it have everything that Neil Gaiman does?
It's those first four.
Asking, Jason, since he didn't like this, he was going to be... He would be interested in reading more.
Oh, you were talking to Jason, not Marty.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, you know, if I heard from you guys that it was good, obviously it's a different writer, and, you know, does the Tim character inspire me at all? No. I mean, but I read this part as if Tim is a nobody, is supposed to be the reader, and we're being introduced kind of, it felt like it was a gateway drug. You know, you're kind of introduced to all this stuff. Hopefully you'll like one of these characters, or one of them would be interesting enough. That you'll go, oh, hey, I want to read the Warlord comic. Or I want to go and read about Sandman. Or John Constantine appeals to me. And that's what I felt it was. I didn't feel like it was a story. I felt it was a selling device. At least until we got into the Charles Vest section, the third book.
Yeah, that definitely has less of a guided tour feel
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, the first, I stopped reading. I started reading and I got bored because I'm like, okay, now we go to the next world. Now we meet the next guy. Now we need... And we meet them only enough for you to go, who's that? Oh, well,
right.
We know the name,
yeah.
But I don't know what they do. Or do they have anything in the rest of the book? Oh, no, they don't. They're just here for a minute. So I was very, you know, like, oh, well, if that's all this is, I don't feel like I'm getting a story. I don't feel like I'm invested in really anybody here. I don't feel like I'm learning anything because it's like just a flash kind of thing.
Right,
yeah.
Well, that's where I'd say the rest of the series is entirely different. The rest of the series
it would
is
have to be.
The Tim Hunter story.
Yeah, it
although,
would.
Yeah,
you
Tim's
couldn't keep just...
The adventures aren't really that, like, epic.
Yeah.
They're very more, like, things just seem to keep on happening to him, and he ends up in all sorts of interesting situations, but they're not, you know, epic, good, and evil. They're very much not like Harry Potter in that way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, and I'm glad that it's not like Harry Potter. I was very glad that it was nice and dark. And everything with John Constantine was great, because I like him,
right.
And he was an actual...
All the affection I have for that particular character is purely from this book, because
yeah.
I've not read any Hellblazer, and I've read Swamp Thing, but...
Well, he has a person... In the four-book set, he's the only one with a real personality.
It's
Mr.
True.
E, once in
yeah.
a while, goes either crazy or we should kill him, but nobody else has, you know, develops or has a character, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just kind of walking by, oh, I'm this guy, oh, I'm this guy.
Yeah. The Phantom Stranger has always been kind of a mysterious character. He just...
Yeah.
And he always shows up in the same kind of situation. He shows up, and it's a sign that things are... that there's something going on, and he can't tell you anything about it, but he can guide you a little bit. He can point you in the right direction, but he can't tell you anything. And
it makes sense.
I honestly get them confused. Like,
oh, yeah.
I know them.
Which
one it is.
And I got confused. I've read tons of these comics, and I was reading this going, who, what, where? And I was like, wow, this is just poorly put together in terms of, I'm going to explain things. No, it's a teaser. Once I figured that out, I went, oh, it's not really a story. It's just, you know, here's the next destination on our road trip. You know, and so I was unhappy with that. It got better as it moved on, and then the artwork took a dive. And so then I was like, really? Is this what we're... Oh, and then we're going to the future? Oh, yeah. So I love Gaiman, and I'm like, I felt like somebody said, hey, we need a top-notch writer to kind of introduce magic to everybody because we're going to launch a bunch of magic lines. Let's get Gaiman to do it, put it out, and people will read this and get interested in all this different stuff. Instead
I think you're absolutely right. I think that's exactly why it was written and how it was written.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Oh, then I don't feel like he's a jackass. Because I was like, wow, he really took a dive here.
That's a DC approached him to introduce their magic elements of the series of the universe to readers.
Gotcha.
Well, that was it. That was why it was written.
That's funny. That I was reading it going, well, is that what this is? Because that sucks. So, anyway.
So, yeah, if you don't like that, that's what it was. Yeah.
Gotcha. Which makes sense. I mean, it, you know, parts were interesting. The art was good for the two chapters. But it doesn't make you at all interested in Tim. You know?
Yeah, I didn't really feel like that either.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I didn't go out and read every single person character that was introduced in it to Tim. It's after I read it. I went and read everything about Tim instead.
Yeah.
Although just now you said that you had gone to Wikipedia to read up on these other characters.
Yeah. Because I knew we were going to talk about it.
Okay, Angela, you were the last one.
Yeah.
She now.
I'm only halfway through, so with a grain of salt, I'm glad you said what you said because as a first time reader of the book, and then really not having a lot of background with some of the other characters, like it was a little frustrating at first because I can sense that I'm supposed to be like, oh look, it's Constantine or someone else, but I don't have that base of knowledge to really pull on to make it, so it kind of feels self-referential to me a lot of the time. But once I got past, like you said, that first book that was really like, you know, the walking tour of this, you know, kind of.
And even me, my head kind of like went out of it a lot of the time in that first chapter.
Yeah, and then now I'm in Fairy right now, so it's getting more interesting, and I'm getting more invested. But I have to say, it is also kind of working on me, like as a newbie. Like, I do now want to read Hellblazer and some other things, so.
And Hellblazer is, I think they're in the 300s. Well, they've got to be at least in the 200s now.
Wow. Okay.
So every, like, major writer from, in the, like, that is now working has been a major, like, considered a special, important, you know, name writer at one point wrote Hellblazer, except for maybe Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, and, you know, Keanu's performance aside, I liked the premise and sort of the world in the movie, so.
Yeah, the movie wasn't bad.
Yeah.
It just had Keanu Reeves in it.
So, I was also already kind of interested, but, so, in terms of, you know, they investing in having him write this book, as somebody who's new, like, it worked on me, at least, so, interesting.
One of the frustrating things about the Hellblazer comics is that the trades for those are not organized.
What?
Like, the first trade may have the first 8 issues. The second trade has issues 10 through 13, and then 15, 18, and 20. And then it just, the trades don't go boom, 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 boom,
yeah,
boom, boom, boom in order. And actually, some of the ones that didn't get collected have recently been released in trade as single issues. And what they're doing is they're doing story arcs.
Yeah.
And there's a number of standalone issues that were between the various story arcs.
The Fable trades do the same thing. Tiffany just started reading those.
Did they?
And they skipped a few, because I would look in the back and I would read what issues they covered, and a few of them skipped a few issues, and I'm like, what's, oh, I'm like, well, that's when a crappy writer and artist was on it. So
yeah,
they
fill an issue.
Kinda,
yeah,
the fill-in issue, and it wasn't that good, so they didn't put it in the trade. But Fables
did actually,
the
Books of Magic trades do that a lot, too, where they're, like, throwing in an annual at the end, which came before the stuff you just read, and, yeah.
I'm okay if they add stuff. I hate it when they leave out an issue, even if it's a bad issue. I kind of want all of them
it's
together.
It's the comic collector in us, you know.
Yeah.
That.
So, as a general rule, do you recommend going in the actual chronological order, or do you follow the order that they were actually issued in?
You know,
that's a big question. I can tell, but
I am the kind of person who, well, it depends on what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'm gonna start reading Hellblazer, I want to start at the beginning and go on to the end. If we're talking about something like Batman or Spider-Man or Superman,
yeah,
I'm not gonna go back to
number
one of all of those.
No.
And read forward.
And I wouldn't tell somebody starting to read Hellblazer to start with number one. They might want to start with something that's known as a really good story arc in the middle somewhere by somebody, you know what I mean? and then start from there, see how they like it, then maybe they'll go way back.
So
but I always stay chronological.
What kind of series would you recommend someone starting at the beginning of?
Something like Sandman. Something
sure.
like
yeah.
it, Fables is perfect
mm-hmm.
for starting from
yeah.
the beginning.
Well, especially because it was so much better at the beginning.
Okay, I'm only on book 6.
Sandman,
Tiffany's on
first
12.
Time it was
so.
Jumped to whatever trade I could get my hands on at the time. So I think I read like 5, 1, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9, and then back to, you know, so I just went all over the place on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So more, if it doesn't cross over a lot, I tell you to start from the beginning. If it's one writer, I don't care about the artist, then it's, you know, better to start in the very beginning. But if it's your mainstream hero,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's definitely segments of Batman, Spider-Man that are great. You know, start there, read that chunk. Ooh, maybe don't read for the next 2 years
mm-hmm.
of comics that comes out. Because some jackass took over. you know, so... Yeah, so it varies. I would never be... What?
Angela, have you seen Strangers in Paradise?
No.
Read that from the beginning.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. That,
oh,
that,
yeah.
that is one,
yeah.
one artist telling a long story.
We'll be learning that too.
Yeah. So, Jason, did you say if you liked it? I missed
well,
that.
Well,
I thought
that's
you were last, but I didn't hear you.
When I read this... years ago, I remember really liking it. And it's not that I didn't like it now. I still like it. But then I also know who these all these characters are. And I don't remember if I knew who they were when I read it the first time. But in, you know, 20-odd years of comic book reading, I know who the Demon is. I know who the Phantom Stranger is. I know who Zatanna is. And there are still characters that show up that I don't know who they are. But for the most part, you know, I know who they are. And this, it's actually kind of interesting. I started reading an article on comicbookresources.com about Kurt Busiek and him ruining the superhero comics.
What?
Have you read that article?
No, I need to, though.
Okay.
Wait, about who wrote it?
Kurt Busiek. Who?
East.
What?
I'm sorry, it's still in here. Who?
Kurt Busiek.
Oh, Kurt Busiek. Oh,
yeah,
I love him.
From Astro
okay.
City and stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
someone
so,
wrote
like,
this...
I really only loved his Astro City stuff. I tried to read some of his more super, like, mainstream stuff, and it didn't really grab me.
No, you got to be old school to like his mainstream
well,
stuff.
Well, and somebody wrote this essay. I'm not sure who the writer is, and I was reading it on my phone earlier today when I was at the gym. And it was about that he has ruined superhero comics for Marvel and DC unwittingly.
Boo-hoo.
And it has to do with it has to do with for Marvel writing Marvels,
which okay, I did like that a lot.
Yeah,
and
good.
How and I haven't finished the article, but what it basically it's not that he has ruined it; it's what his work has influenced has ruined it, and how the Marvels comic where it fits in all these little stories into the cracks.
Yeah,
and that. The writer of the article says that what we are constantly experiencing in superhero comics now because of Kurt Busiek is nostalgia porn.
It is. I was just going to say, that's why I love reading his stuff. Like Secret Invasion and all those crossover things. I was reading that and I'd be like, wow, I can only share this with like 5 people I know. Because it's
but
all
it makes
insider
you
stuff.
Feel so special.
Well, it's
that
awesome
you
because,
know it.
Because I remember this from that and like, oh, it's so cool. It's kind of like when you watch a show that references another show that you love. Anyway, but you know, you'll see
well,
something.
It's,
and they,
it's like Buffy bringing back Mrs. Callender in you know later episodes and things like that.
Well, a show I was watching had Veronica Mars theme song in the beginning of it.
Aww.
And I, yes, exactly. You know, and it was after it was canceled, and you're like, oh, I wish we were free, you know? And so that's what those comics are like. It's like, oh, I remember that. That's so great.
And it's one of those reasons, like, sci-fi fanboys love Kevin Smith.
Yeah, you can't.
Because, you know, he loves the stuff we love, and he talks about it.
You can't watch Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back without knowing Kevin Smith, otherwise it's a stupid movie.
Right.
And so that's
still
what
a stupid movie.
Books of Magic.
But with great inside jokes.
I wasn't going to say it out loud.
Yeah.
But.
No, I was waiting.
So that's what Books of Magic is to me, is it has a lot of this nostalgia porn in it because
yeah.
it has all these references. But it really is a reference guide.
Yeah.
But it's not a very good reference guide.
Well, I was going to say, Marvels, which I really didn't understand almost anything at the time that I read it. I hadn't read any Marvel stuff. I had only read indie comics. And yet I still liked it because it was beautiful Alex Ross artwork.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was an interesting story. And there was enough new story and enough comprehensible that it carried me through the stuff I didn't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can,
which
if you write it out, you can
get
there.
That's with Azure City, except nobody knows what he's referencing. But that's what kind of makes it so cool.
Yeah, Astro City, though, feels a lot more self-contained. Like, it's not, you know, there is nothing else for him to reference.
Well, it references all the archetypes. I mean,
it tells you all the stuff, you know, about what happened 40 years ago in the city and what happened here. And, oh, there's that character, you know.
Yeah.
You just get a sense that this is this huge world and you don't know because he hasn't told you yet.
Yeah.
Who these people are, what happened that 40 years ago, 15 years ago, what was the fate of this, you know, you just hear that something tragic happened to this hero, and everybody knows what happened, you know, everybody in the city, so they don't, you know, say, well, because he did blah, blah, blah.
And
you just know that something tragic happened,
but
eventually you may find out.
It's just so much better writing than, like, the constant exposition.
I was just going to say, that feels more like what you would get in a real novel. You know, in a novel, that sort of backstory, you know, or implied backstory is absolutely necessary. You know, and in a comic book, it just feels like, you know, because the writing standard is probably a little bit lower, you know, you just don't get that as often. And I do think that that's one of the reasons Astro City is awesome.
Yeah, no, Astro City, and it has Batman as a vampire, come on. it's amazing. But I felt that, you know, with Books of Magic, they did that kind of, they alluded to like 50 things and never told you any of it, and you really didn't feel like it involved the story. And that's what bugged me, because I was like, you know, it's not that, oh, there's this mystery or that everybody knows or something that you're going to find out and it's going to be really cool at the end. It's, no, we just want to show a page of some guy that you don't know because we want to. And I'm like...
And then he won't be referenced again.
And he won't do anything. Like, Warlord just sat there on a tree, and I'm like, that's it? That's not involvement. You know, I liked it better when they got involved. When Dr. Fate at the end finally said, yeah, it's all a joke. I'm like, yeah, it is. You know, those kind of things where it was cool moments where they interacted and, you know, revealed what they really thought or what was going on behind it. Whereas otherwise, in the beginning, it was more like, well, here's a photo. It's like somebody showing you pictures of their trip. It was not fun.
I don't remember the first time in what I felt about the first issue, but for me, I struggled with the first issue this time around. I was just like, except in a few cases where I was like, oh, yeah, that's, what's his name, the Spectre, okay.
Yeah, the Spectre.
For the most part, it just, like, my mind kept wandering, and then, especially when I just went, you know, page to page, and this is what it was like in Egypt, and this is what it was like in China.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're not sure what you need to hold on to and what is just sort of... exposition, you know, like,
well,
do I need to remember
that's
that?
Pretty much,
later?
It's all exposition.
Right, and so.
That's what you find out. It's all exposition.
You get to a point and you're like, okay, I'm just going forward.
And knowing about the characters made it a little bit worse because if the Spectre comes out and kills somebody, you're really important.
Yeah.
Because that was like, oh my god. And then he leaves. I'm like,
just like Jason did
just
now.
I know, I was going to say, like.
He got up and left the room with that. But yeah, I kind of feel like it did tie up nicely at the end, and Angela doesn't know this, but you know, like at least it felt like there was a conclusion, which I didn't really even know whether we would get that.
Yeah, which is ironic because I think those of us who read the rest of the series and enjoyed it don't remember that this first one had any kind of closure, because the whole point was what came next.
Well, and it's interesting that the last word in the comic, I know this is a spoiler for you.
Okay.
The end.
I'm okay.
But
I'm
the,
okay.
The last word in the four issues is magic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like the
Well, that actually reminds me of what
that's
I...
all you need to know about it is that this is magic.
Uh huh.
What were you going to say?
It made me remember back before I read it while I was just browsing around. You know, in the comics trade set paperback section of Borders or something. I think for any time I see it, I saw it without knowing who Neil Gaiman was or you know, any of that. I just assumed it was something to do with Magic the Gathering.
Because
it even has a similar logo, at least the trade that I got.
Yep, it's interesting, yeah, like the font is kind of a similar font.
It's almost a, the papyrus font a little bit.
Yeah. Tim on it, but Latum's do. Mine just has like a big rune on it. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
They come up with a million different trades.
Yeah, we've got like Harry Potter on a skateboard, basically.
So yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that is what we have. I looked at the trade and I went, oh, jeez.
Oh, no, they didn't. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because now to hearken back to our, you know, unspoken second unwritten podcast, the one that we didn't do and maybe someday we'll do, you know, I feel like unwritten really isn't a Harry Potter story either. It's a what comes next or, a sort of a using the Harry Potter universe kind of as a launching point maybe.
Oh yeah, it's got the actual story it's telling isn't a Harry Potter story at all.
Right.
But the books that they're Tom Taylor books in the unwritten are supposed to be Harry Potter.
Right. Right. So I guess what I feel like is, you know, we probably have room for, you know, a good Harry Potter esque comic. Like, I feel like, you know, I feel like it hasn't been done because this, I thought this was it, and I'm getting now that it's not.
Well, I mean, when you get to the ones that are really more about Tim, they're a little bit more just because they are about this boy wizard.
And his friends.
There's no magic school.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say, I feel like Hogwarts is kind of one of the really defining parts.
Hogwarts is a character in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
As much as any of the other characters, Hogwarts is a character.
Right.
Well, you know, any good setting trip would be very interesting to actually have somebody write a comic set at Hogwarts. Not necessarily about Harry Potter, but about that world that's been established, but, you know, you'd have to get J.K. Rowling to sign off on that.
Yeah, she wants more Warner Brothers.
Yeah, I don't really even want a Harry Potter comic. I just want
Potter ripoff comic.
Yeah. Well, I kind of want someone else's take on that concept.
Sure. Training of a wizard.
Yeah, yeah. I want wizard school. I want wizard school.
Well, that's why the X-Men were always so cool, because here are superheroes in training.
Totally.
And then they had the New Mutants, which were even younger, even more learning, and you're like, this is awesome. They don't know how to use their powers.
I love New Mutants. New Mutants was... I was so much more a fan of New Mutants than of X-Men.
Yep.
Yes.
Depending who was writing. Anyway.
Yes. Claremont was good. Was.
And Bill, whatever the last name is.
Sienkiewicz.
Skins. Yeah, whatever. He was good. Yeah, S. Bill S. Thank you. Thanks for the help. Whoa. We're having water fights over here that I didn't realize.
The cats.
Yeah, first I didn't realize she scored. I was like, how did that happen?
Okay, so... Do we have any concluding comments here? Does anyone have any last thoughts?
I think, you know what, I still do kind of enjoy it, not as much as I did before, but I still kind of do enjoy it, and I want to read the annotations now, see if I get a little bit more deeper into it that way. But, you know, this, The Unwritten, Harry Potter, The Magicians.
The Magicians, which I'm still waiting for Florence to finish.
Yeah, I got a little distracted, but I started it, it's really good.
Yeah, I mean, they all... tie into the same themes, and it's I think they all complement each other very well.
They do, yeah. And I guess that's kind of why I was saying I wanted more. I feel like, you know, there's so much more to be written in this kind of a universe.
Yep.
You know?
Well, and you have 76 issues of it to
it's true.
Read.
My conclusion was I think DC should put out the trades of those final 30 issues because I think they are some of the best in the whole series. And they were, for all the ones that were collected into trades were written by John Lee Ryder. He did a really good job at establishing characters and he created Molly. But then Peter Gross, who's actually co-writing The Unwritten right now, I'm pretty sure it was him, I'm not positive, but I think he was the artist during that time and then he stayed on and wrote the last 30 issues as well, and they were great. And they actually got a little bit epic. So DC should put those out.
I
now, are those the ones, Susie, that you gave us?
No. The ones that we got from Susie are the after Tim Hunter grows up a little bit ones, which
those
is a whole different thing.
DC tried to, after those last 30 issues of Tim Grows, they tried to continue the character of Tim, but have him age a few years, so he's more of a teenager, or like even a young adult, and the writers who they chose, they just, it didn't work for me.
Right, and we actually, on that note, though, I think...
Feel like the character anymore.
On that note, I think we need to wrap up because we just got some more visitors and
Podcast has been a called on account of babies.
Yes,
because another baby has just shown up.
They've been remarkably quiet, but I think we shouldn't push our luck. So, thank you all for joining us. It was a great crowd this time.
And thanks, Susie, for your extensive knowledge about all this.
Yeah,
you should annotate it for me.
Yeah,
my annotations would be. That's good art. I don't know who that is. I didn't remember this part.
And links to Wikipedia.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.